LOL, Woj, and Shams be going at it. Hashtag, who said it first?
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter as always at redrock_bball. NBA free agency has kicked off. We are a little bit under 24 hours in to the free agency process. There's been quite a few guys signed. Some of the big guys are still out there, of course, and one of those being
LeBron James,
who at the time of recording has not gone to a new franchise, hasn't recommitted, hasn't signed anywhere at this point. So, of course, we'll be getting to the LeBron news when that does go down. But there were tons of deals on day one of NBA free agency. So, Michael Bolton.
Let's get to it.
All right, that is a really good idea. Just a reminder, if you do want to be a part of the Red Rock Challenge redraft leagues for this coming season, go check my Twitter feed. There will be a tweet there linking you to an application form just so I can gather your email address and what sort of leagues you want to be in, head-to-head, points, roto, paid or free, regular leagues or draft-only leagues. There's going to be tons of them this season, so make sure you're putting down all your separate preferences. And then when the time comes at some point during this month, emails will go out for the signups for those particular leagues. And thanks to everyone who has joined all the new Dynasty leagues, all six of those leagues are now full. Two 30-team leagues there, a 20-teamer, a 16-teamer, and two 14-team league Dynasty leagues to go along with the six existing Dynasty leagues I'm running. So that's now 12 Dynasty leagues that we are running. So that's obviously a quite significant amount of those Dynasty leagues. Let's talk free agency, and we'll start by talking about the players who went back to the teams they were on last season without too much to say about those guys. Kevin Durant heads back to Golden State on a two-year, $61 million contract with a player option for that second season. This was always going to happen. It's completely expected, and nothing really changes there with anything with Durant in terms of fantasy value. Just more of the same for him and the rest of that crew in Golden State. Paul George, I guess somewhat surprisingly, heads back to Oklahoma City on a four-year, $137 million contract. Has a player option at the end. The most surprising part of this, it seemed that George was leaning towards going back to Oklahoma City for the last couple of weeks, but the surprising part is that the Lakers, who suffered a $500,000 fine for tampering with Paul George, didn't even get a meeting. Magic Johnson could not get a meeting with Paul George. We know that people have been telling me for 12 months, doesn't matter, Paul George is a Laker next season. Why would we trade for him? Blah, blah, blah. Well, this is why. Because he was traded to the Thunder, and the Thunder convinced him. He's obviously good mates with Russell Westbrook, and he hung around there. And now, after 2 years' time with the new NBA extension rules, he's going to be eligible for a huge extension, putting this contract potentially in the seven-year, $290 million range. And, of course, they can't sign seven-year deals. But after this initial four, he can sign an extension for, after the initial three, an extension for another four after that for a huge supermax amount. And that would be what he would be looking at. The Thunder also brought back Jeremy Grant on a three-year, $27 million deal with a player option for that third season. And they are now absolutely cash-strapped, taxed out. They have got a payroll, including tax payments, of almost $300 million. And common sense would dictate that Carmelo Anthony would be a candidate to be stretched. It would also, his playing style and the fact that they were so much better with him off the court would also dictate that he is a candidate to be stretched. But as I discussed with Eric G on Locked On NBA today, is that if Paul George wants Carmelo Anthony around, and that was part of the reason that he was, you know, signed and brought back, then Carmelo Anthony will be around for one more season. So that doesn't necessarily mean that Carmelo is gone. But of course, if Melo does go, that does open up more opportunities for Jeremy Grant. But I think we can pretty much rule out the Thunder making any significant moves here in free agency after this, meaning that the majority of their team will come back the same. And the majority of their fantasy production will be very similar. I don't expect Melo to improve. I don't expect much to change with Paul George or Russell Westbrook. Maybe Westbrook's free throw percentage can actually go back to being good. But otherwise, this team is fairly locked into where they are. And the numbers that we should be seeing from those guys, I imagine, will be fairly similar for this season and probably for seasons to come after that. Let's look at a couple of deals in Denver. Nikola Jokic.
Pretty good. Pretty good.
Yeah, he is. He has signed he will sign a 5-year, $146 million max contract. Just more goodness for Jokic coming. And then in a move which I found a little bit curious, but many people disagree. Many smart basketball people disagree. They think Will Barton is good. I don't think the Farton one is that good. And he was signed to a 4-year, $54 million contract with a player option. I think he can do things that are fine. He can create his own shot on that bench unit. He can handle the ball. But he's going to be the starter for this team next year. Is all words coming out of Denver. He will start. And the thing that I hate about him, watching him play, and watching him play in this offense and the way Michael Malone, the doctor, coaches things, is that he will take the ball out of the hands of better players. And if he is going to be starting, he absolutely 100% should be the fifth option on this team. The blue arrow, Jamal Murray, Gaz Harris.
Nice, Gary!
Paulie Millsap and Nikola Jokic, they're the other members of the starting five. Farton Will Barton is the worst of that group, but we saw so many times last season where he would dribble the shit out of the ball, take these nonsense last second shots, and hijack the offense at times. So let's hope that's not too much of a concern, but he will be moving into a larger role with Wilson Chandler, likely moving back to the bench, and that will pretty much put Barton as a solid fantasy guy for next season. I'm never too thrilled with what he can do, and hopefully he does move into that fifth option in that starting lineup, which will, I think, actually hurt his fantasy numbers. So that is something for us to pay attention to there. But he is back with the Nuggets on a deal that I wasn't massively a fan of, because I'm not a massive Will Barton fan. But guys like Zach Lowe really think he's good, and Zach Lowe knows more about basketball than I do. The San Antonio Spurs made a couple of moves. Rudy Gay, 1 year, $10 million. Of course, so much can change with San Antonio depending on what happens with Kawhi Leonard. It feels unlikely that Kawhi Leonard is going to be back, and it appears there is momentum gathering that maybe he'll be headed to the Philadelphia 76ers along with LeBron James, but we don't know that for sure at this point. Gay is back, and he will be 2 years removed from an Achilles tendon injury, so he might be finding himself back in the starting lineup. There's also Kyle Anderson, whether he returns, and then Marco Bellinelli returns to San Antonio on a 2-year, $12 million deal. We know Bellinelli put up some pretty good performances for the Philadelphia 76ers at the end of last season and in the playoffs. He's not really a fantasy asset guy. He can shoot threes. He often does it on fairly low percentages and does very, very little else. I don't really think we're going to be seeing all that much out of Bellinelli that's going to get us really excited. He has played for the Spurs before, of course, and won a championship with them a few years back. But this is a guy that last year played 24 minutes per game, hit two threes, which is clearly very valuable. And over the last 17 games for Philadelphia, hit 2.5 threes with 15 points. But two assists, less than a steal, two rebounds, and did it on really high 52% shooting, which is unlikely to be able to continue. So while he was valuable over the last portion of the season, when J.J. Redick was hurt, he was having some value there, and in the playoffs as well. In San Antonio, I don't think that he's necessarily going to be a player you'd want to look at in standard formats. But he is still an interesting guy, at least, who can be a player who can get in there and knock down some triples for you. I was meant to put up that little graphic there of Marco Bellinelli. I was completely gone off book in my script there, and guys that I was talking about. Got to stick to the script, Josh. The other guys we need to look at here: Joe Harris goes back to the Nets for 2 years, $16 million. He was a really key part of what they were doing last season, and could he see a slightly larger role this year? Yeah, potentially, but I imagine very much of the same for Joe Harris. Chris Paul goes back to the Rockets, 4 years, $160 million contract. That's obviously a huge, huge contract for Chrissy. He's going to be more of the same. You're going to have an appetite to take on his risk given the injuries associated with Chris Paul, but he's a player who's going to fall into second rounds in drafts, and I think there is going to be some value there for Chris Paul. Again, just hope he can stay healthy, but when a guy gets to his age and has consistent lower body leg injuries, you do have to have a level of worry that he will be able to stay healthy. I'm not really sure that confidence is going to be there. Aaron Baines, Bainesy, he goes back to the Celtics, 2 years, $11 million with a player option. Of course, there is the Rock DJ, Robbie Williams, who was drafted, but another misstep from Williams today, missed the first practice for the Summer League team due to a flight issue. This is why he dropped in the draft. He's already had two screw-ups with the Celtics, missing the introductory press conference and then missing the first practice. Get your finger out of your ass, Rob, and get things going, because you've obviously got the talent. You just seem to be absolutely, whatever the opposite of switched on is, that is where he seems to be. So let's hope that goes well for him. But Baines is back, and that's going to limit what Williams can do straight away for this team. With Bainesy back, we know what he's going to be able to provide. We're also going to have the Vanilla Tice back as well, another center there, so Baines is not going to be too much of a fantasy option. Gerald Green also goes back to the Rockets on a one-year, $2.4 million deal. With Trevor Ariza leaving, which we'll talk about soon, Gerald Green could be finding himself in a larger rotation, and very similar to someone like Marco Bellinelli, going to be an interesting guy to try and add some threes off waiver wires, off the bench for the Rockets, and provide some value, but not doing too much more apart from that. Some scoring and some threes, that's really all he brings. Derrick Rose back to Minnesota on a one-year, $2.4 million deal. Yes, it's the minimum deal, and there's no problem with that. In terms of price, he's not a very good player. He had some moments in the playoffs, so I give him credit there. Jamal Crawford's gone from Minnesota. Do they automatically just plug Rose into that Crawford role? Just weird to me, him being a shooting guard, can't play defense, can't hit threes, but I think he's going to be getting 25 minutes or so. Now, that's not something that means you're going to want him in fantasy league, because you don't, because he won't get steals, he won't hit threes, he doesn't rebound, he doesn't get assists, he doesn't have good field goal percentage in general. He's got okay field goal percentage. He doesn't get to the line. He doesn't do anything great from a fantasy point of view, but I think his role is going to be increased this season from what it was last year. It's also not great news for Tyus Jones, who I think is a really good point guard. Unless they play Rose exclusively as a shooting guard, then Jones could be in trouble and back as a third string point guard. But I could see him still getting those backup minutes. I do really value Jones as an NBA player, and I don't like the way Tibbs makes really any of his front office moves. And with legitimately not even taking the piss, there is rumors that if Luol Deng or Joakim Noah get bought out, Tibbs will look to bring them back in, which is just nonsense. Like, just can you expand your scouting outside of players that you've spent a season with? Just anything. Just do something different. That would be great. Then these are all the ones that happened pretty much in that flurry of about an hour or so after midnight on the opening of free agency. It's quite a slow day the next day. Fred VanVleet goes back to the Raptors on a two-year, $18 million deal. Again, a very similar role will be coming for him next season. A guy who can close games, play 20-odd minutes, contribute threes, get some steals, some assists. A really solid mid-to-deep league fantasy guy. I don't think we're going to see Kyle Lowry moved on from, and if he did, I'm not sure if VanVleet would necessarily be the starter, but he would get an increase in minutes. But he's not a guy that he's going to see too much of a change in his value. Luke Kornet goes back to the Knicks. He was a two-way guy, then tendered into restricted free agency, a one-year, $1.6 million contract with Kristaps Porzingis. Out. Injured for this team, Kornet could find himself a little bit more of a regular, but they did bring in Mitchell Robinson as well, although Robinson, I reckon, might see a little bit of time or a little bit more time with the G League this season, and Kornet could be an option in those very deep leagues, while Salah Mejri goes back to the Mavericks on a one-year, $1.6 million deal, but with the other centers in tow there, and we'll talk about that a little bit later, he's going to be a blocks stream guy and really have very little value. They're all the guys who went back to their original teams. Now let's talk about some players who found themselves in new locations. And the first one of those we're going to talk about is a player who did leave the Dallas Mavericks and go to the Indiana Pacers. And that is Doug McDermott, who heads across to the Pacers on a contract which was 3 years and $22 million. I don't understand why the Pacers are going there. They've got Bojan Bogdanović and they just guaranteed Bogdanović's deal for this season. They could have cut him and saved a lot of money. McDermott, you know, Thad Young just opted in, and McDermott's best position is probably at the four, but he can play at the three. So he comes in as the backup behind Bojan and behind Thad Young, and he is one of the worst fantasy players that are around. On a per 36 basis last season, he was the 458th ranked player because what he does is hit threes. And that's it, really. He doesn't do anything else. He doesn't rebound at a high rate. He doesn't get any steals or blocks. Per 36 steals, per 0.4 and 0.3 blocks. They're horrible numbers. Now, the efficiency was nice at 47%. The free throws were nice at 79%, but just one attempt per game. 43% from three is nice. He hit one three a game in his 22 minutes and scored 8 points. He's not going to be a fantasy guy in 12s. 14s, 16s, 18s, probably even 20-team leagues. Again, because he's going to be playing this similar 23-24-minute role behind Thad Young, behind Bojan Bogdanović, and he's not pushing to bigger minutes. And even if he got 30 minutes, he's not anywhere close to a top 150 player. He just doesn't do anything in any of those other areas. I thought it was a curious signing by the Indiana Pacers. It's not much. But we've seen how tight this market is here in free agency. And that's part of the criticisms I have of the Barton deal. It's 4 years. And yes, the cap is likely to rise next offseason. But still, there's just no money around for these guys. So who are you bidding against to sign Will Barton to 4 years, 54? Who are you bidding against to sign McDermott to $7 million per season when there's just very much no cap space around it? And McDermott, what does he actually provide for this team? I don't get the deal, really. He can shoot. He can do absolutely nothing else. And he's not going to be any sort of a fantasy contributor outside of the deepest of deep leagues. Let's go on to the next signing, and that is DeAndre Jordan finally made his way to the Dallas Mavericks. 3 years ago, we had the old emoji war over on Twitter when he committed to the Mavericks and then reneged and went back to the Clippers. That won't be the case this time. He signed a one-year $24.1 million contract, the same amount of deal that he opted out with the Clippers. The Mavericks gave that back on a one-year deal, and he'll re-enter free agency in 2019. But for now, he comes in. He's clearly the number one center on this team and will start. I was just speaking with Nick Angstad of Locked On Mavs on the Locked On NBA podcast, and we're talking about, how does this impact what Dirk does? And does Dirk start now? And the feeling is that Dirk is probably going to come off the bench with the pencil Harrison Barnes at the four and DeAndre Jordan at the five. Jordan was a little bit disappointing with his numbers last season, 12 points and 15 boards, but under one block per game, 0.9 after being at 1.7 the year before, 65 from the line, but did improve 10 percentage points on his free throws up to 58%. But if you are drafting DeAndre Jordan, you're doing it under the assumption that you are going to be losing free throws, but his Z score in that category went down from negative 4.29 to negative 2.44. So a real dip there, or increase in the free throw percentage, and much less of a negative impact in that category for fantasy. Now, the big issue there is, can he go back to being a guy that gets 1.5 blocks? He is older than you think. He's almost 30. And athleticism did look like it was dipping last season. His game is really based on that. I don't think he's getting back to two blocks per game, but I would guess that he will remain at over one block per game. He'll get to 1.2, 1.3 maybe. The rebounding will still be strong. The pencil's not a strong rebounder. Dirk's not a strong rebounder. So when he's sharing the court with those guys, or if it's someone like even Dwight Powell, or Maxi Kleber, he's going to be inhaling pretty much every rebound. So I can see DeAndre Jordan getting 14 to 15 rebounds per night. Will he score more than the 12 points per game? Well, with Dennis Smith, Luka Doncic, and Dirk around, spacing the floor, providing those passes, I think he could see himself rise to 13, 14 points. Maybe 14 is a bit of a stretch, maybe 13 points per game. And I think he gets a little bit of a renaissance in terms of his overall fantasy value for next season, with his ability to block shots potentially getting back up a little bit, and maybe we see the field goal percentage rise. He'd been at over 70% for three consecutive seasons and went down to 65%. 65% is still great, but it probably knocked 10 to 15% off his overall fantasy value. by him not being putting up those same sort of field goal percentage numbers for the Clippers that he did in previous seasons. So he goes to Dallas now and will be a strong fourth, fifth round type of option in a punt free throw percentage setting. The next guy we'll talk about is Ersan Ilyasova going back to the Milwaukee Bucks on a 3-year, $21 million deal. The last year of that contract has a non-guarantee in it. Didn't really understand this one all that much either. They could be looking at moving on from Jabari Parker. Mirza Teletovic, we know his health issues there. Ilyasova was great for Philadelphia. He provides solid defense. He can space the floor. He can shoot. But is he the guy that you want starting on this team? No, I don't think that'll be the case, because I think they'll go with the Muppet, they'll go with Yanni, Chris Middleton, and then probably go with a Bledsoe Brogdon backcourt, would be my guess at this point. If Jabari doesn't return, Ilyasova's probably playing that 24, 25-minute night per night role. A really strong rebounder who's had some great rebounding times when he's not surrounded by other good rebounders, and he's not really surrounded by other good rebounders here in Milwaukee. So I'd expect his rebound rate to actually go up. He's not really going to get you much in terms of steals or blocks, and field goal percentage will be low, but he's a good free throw guy. He'll hit some threes, he'll score a bit, he'll get some rebounds. He's got a shot at a top 150 season. He's probably more of a 14 or more of a 16 team league guy, but there could be an interesting role here developing for him, at least in the type of scenario where we're looking at someone who can fill in and start at times and can provide, you know, real good streaming sort of value. And that's where I see that Ilyasova. I'm not a massive fan of the deal in general. Ilyasova is 31 years of age already, so this is taking him through to 34. Again, that last year is non-guaranteed, so they'd likely end up waiving him. But a strong playoff performance from Ersan really did trigger this off. He had four double-doubles in a row in the playoffs. He also loves Milwaukee. His home is there. I believe his family is still in Milwaukee. And it was a little bit of a surprise last season when he did sign with Philadelphia and not Milwaukee after he was bought out by Atlanta. So he's going to move into a solid enough role, but not really much that's going to change the overall fantasy landscape. I wouldn't look for him to start. And if Jabari does return, which I have significant doubts about now, if Jabari does return, that's going to put a further cramp in Ilyasova's playing time. But he's going to have marginal value, but it is more going to be for those deeper league type situations. Let's talk about Eddie Davis, who left the Portland Trailblazers and headed to the Brooklyn Nets. Another one-year deal here. Davis, 1 year, $4.4 million. He said he wanted to be back in Portland. That's a very cheap deal, but Neil Olshey didn't want him back, it appears. It also appears that Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum are pissed at that decision from Olshey. Ed Davis was very, very good last season. He is not a starting center probably in the league, but he is a guy who I felt like has always been dicked around wherever he has been. Toronto, Memphis, the Lakers, Portland. Wherever he seemed to be, he always seemed to get a rough go of things. He averaged 5.5 points and 7.5 rebounds in only 19 minutes last season, which isn't great, but 14 rebounds per 36 is strong. 1.3 blocks, solid field goal percentage. If he was a starting center playing 28 minutes per night, you'd want him in a 14-team league for his rebounding, for his shot blocking, for his efficiency. And he's a guy that obviously his teammates loved. All of the Portland beat writers were absolutely stunned that he didn't come back. And they were, I won't say heartbroken, but they were really disappointed that Davis wouldn't return, because they saw him on an every night basis and they said, this bloke is bloody good and he is providing really strong value for this team. Defensively, he's solid. He can't shoot at all, but protects the rim. One of the best rebounders in the entire NBA, especially on the offensive end, and a real positive. And at times, you know, big chunks of time last season, was the best center on this roster without too much of a doubt. Now, they do have Zach Collins there, who they'll be looking to give more minutes to, almost definitely considering the way that he rose up in the playoffs. Yusuf Nurkic is a restricted free agent. Maybe they don't bring Nurkic back, but I would say now that Davis has gone, we will see Nurkic back in Portland with Collins as the backup. Now, as for Eddie Davis heading to Brooklyn, what does this do for his fantasy value? He was the 237th ranked player last year in 19 minutes. Maybe he plays 20 minutes, but Jarrett Allen is going to be the starter, and Jarrett Allen is going to be playing 26 to 27 minutes a night, would be my guess. leaving you 20, 21 minutes there for Davis. So a strong rebound stream with some blocks and field goal percentage puts him into that deeper league sort of category. But it doesn't put him as a guy. I don't imagine, and I would be absolutely stunned if Davis came in and started for this team. It won't happen. And if he did, he wouldn't be playing 30 a night. He will have some starts this season if Allen gets hurt. I've got no doubt that he will start some games, and he will have some short-term value as maybe a 10 and 10 guy in 28 minutes if he got that chance. It won't be the regular. It will be Jarrett Allen's position. Davis will be a great, one of the best backups in the league, and will get his 20 minutes or so and do exactly what he needs to do to be a valuable piece to this team. Let's talk Trevor Ariza in what was perhaps the most stunning of the moves in free agency. A one-year $15 million deal saw Trevor Ariza leave the Houston Rockets and go to the Phoenix Suns. This has massive implications in the NBA. The Rockets were firing back up to challenge the Warriors. They probably would have beaten the Warriors had Chris Paul not gotten hurt in that Western Conference Finals. And losing Ariza is massive. I don't know how they're going to be able to replace him. They're going to have to bring back Luke Marmute. PJ Tucker's in the mix there. Gerald Green, I said that earlier. Maybe he moves into that sort of role. But this is a massive blow for the Rockets' chances of beating the Warriors. Yes, they brought Chris Paul back. But it's a really weird one in terms of Ariza agreeing so quickly to head to Phoenix. And we heard that he was looking at $50 to $60 million. Then Shams came out and said that was untrue. But he's still got $15 million. I'm sure the Rockets would have said, we'll pay 1 year $15 million. We'll pay you 1 year $18 million if you want 1 year. We want to bring this back and challenge the Warriors. It's a really weird decision. It's quite a weird decision in my mind from Ariza. Unless the Rockets said, well, we don't want you, which I doubt, or we'll give you $7 million we'll give you 14 over 2 years. And he's went, what's this bullshit? I find it really, really curious that he left this team and moved on to the Phoenix team, which was the worst team in the NBA with the worst offense and the worst defense. Now, from a Phoenix point of view, Ariza moves in and will be a starter and play 30 minutes or so. But there is TJ Warren, there is Joshie Jackson, there is McCall Bridges. It puts a massive, massive dampener on values of Dragan Bender and Marquise Chris. I think you're going to see Warren and Ariza playing the four, Bridges and Jackson playing the two and the three, with a lot more Devin Booker running at point guard and then Ali Okobo and Brandon Knight backing him up. Now, we have to look at Ariza. Now, people overrate Trevor Ariza, I think, in fantasy quite a bit, and he fell a lot last year to be the 88th ranked player. He's not a high usage guy, so he goes to a team with worse players in Houston, but still some high usage options. Warren, Booker, Ayton, Josh Jackson, these will all be high usage guys. So his usage rate of 14.8 last season, I don't think it jumps too significantly. Maybe it goes to the 16% he was rocking in the 15-16 season with Houston. He shot 37% from three last season, 41% from the field. His steal rate has dropped, which had really elevated his fantasy numbers, 1.5 last season after being at 1.82 and 1.9 for the previous three seasons. He's not an assist guy. He's not a high scorer. He doesn't block shots, and he's not a big rebounder. I get the feeling that some people might be looking at Trevor Ariza, who is 33 years of age at this point, and might be looking, well, yeah, he has had top 40, top 50 seasons over the past 4 years, and maybe last year was an anomaly, maybe it was the Chris Paul factor, but I think that the biggest thing is age. The shooting dropped, the steals dropped, which is a big indicator of what can happen as you get older. The field goal percentage remains shit, and I don't imagine that's going to push up in Phoenix. So I think that Ariza is in significant risk of being overdrafted. He'll be a player that I won't be overly invested into getting, and I'd look for him to maybe even fall to outside the top 100 in terms of his value next season. Because again, he's going to a bad team, but he's not going to a team who doesn't have high usage players. Ayton, Warren, Jackson, and of course Booker are all going to be taking a lot more shots, and Ariza's going to be a corner three type of guy. He can't create shit for himself. You might see that usage again push to 16, maybe it's 17%, maybe he scores 13 points, but the efficiency, will the steals rebound? Maybe he can improve on that, but I don't expect to see. And look, his previous four seasons, his fantasy rank had been 35, 39, 54, and 54. Good numbers, really good numbers on the back of high steal numbers and a lot of threes. I don't expect that to bounce back to that level. He was playing also 35 minutes per night in those years. This is not Mike D'Antoni's Phoenix Suns. I don't imagine he's playing 35 minutes a night now for this team, especially with all those wings there. You know, Bender, Chris, who can play the four. Josh Jackson, Bridges, TJ Warren, who can play on the wings. So there are other guys there. He'll be more of a 31-minute guy, 32-minute guy maybe, instead of 34, 35, which takes some of that value away from Trevor Ariza as well. But definitely the most interesting signing, not because it makes Phoenix into a contender, because it takes away the value from Houston, and just overall thought processes from Trevor, from Phoenix, from Houston. Really a confusing situation to see him go to the Suns. Great for Suns fans, and what he can do is he can provide defense. He can still defend, not anywhere near the level that he used to be able to defend. He's not as good a defender as he has been in the past, but he is still a strong defender, but just not at that same level. Still a valuable player, but how will that translate on a shit team as opposed to what he was doing on a good team with the Rockets? And there is some significant fantasy risk there with him. Then a couple of other guys who have moved teams now. Omri Caspi, who was waived by the Warriors in order for Quinn Cook to remain on the roster. He's gone to the Memphis Grizzlies. Now, Caspi's a guy who I have liked in multiple stops. I've also not liked him in other... I didn't like him when he was in Houston. He struggled at times in Cleveland, but he's had some strong seasons, especially in Sacramento, where he's been able to do some interesting stuff. Now, last year, per 36 minutes, he played well. Strong rebounding numbers, scored well, blocks and steals were pretty high, but he was also in limited playing time, and the block numbers he put up last year were completely an outlier as opposed to what he'd done in his career. He was at 0.9 blocks per 36 minutes last year. Previously, 0.2, 0.3, 0.2, 0.4. So a massive jump up. Now he goes to a Memphis team that just drafted Triple J, Jaren Jackson Jr. He has played some time at the three, and maybe with Tyreek Evans gone, Dylan Brooks pushes more down to the two. We see some Caspi at the three, but he's probably more suited to a four. There's Jermichael Green, there's Jarrell Martin there. I see Caspi as more of an 18-minute-per-game sort of a player, a guy that for some reason completely got shit scared of shooting threes last year, only hit 0.2, hit him at 46%, but was completely shitting himself. And I don't really get it, because his previous seasons, when he was in Minnesota and New Orleans, 35% the year before, the last 2 years in Sacramento, 41 and 40% on decent enough volume, and then just completely refused to shoot them last season. So it's unlikely that Omri Caspi is going to have too much of a fantasy impact, but there could be impact on guys like Green, on Martin, in that Grizzlies lineup. Let's talk about the next guy, and that is Sauce Castillo, Nick Stauskas, who heads to the Portland Trailblazers. Many people hate this signing because they just don't like Stauskas. Stauskas can be a useful player. They also don't like the fact they let go of Pat Connaughton to bring in Stauskas. I think that Stauskas is a better player than Connaughton. Stauskas can shoot. Connaughton can shoot as well. But Stauskas can also handle the ball. And last season, he was with Philly. He was out of the rotation as they got better, then was sent to Brooklyn. And he didn't do too much there, but hit 40% of his threes. He was at 37 the year before that. In that year in Philadelphia in 16-17, he showed some ball handling. Averaged over 3 assists per 36 minutes, over 2 threes per 36, 12 points. He'd never been an efficient shooter, but can hit threes, which is, you know, his three-point percentage is higher than his field goal percentage because he does struggle with the two-point stuff. But he's going to be coming in that Connaughton role, a role in the mid-teens most likely, and will become another one of these players that you can look at as a sneaky source of three-pointers, perhaps. Maybe he can hit one or one. Maybe he can hit 1.5, 1.7 threes per game. I think that's a possibility for Stauskas next season with two assists. That's going to have value in deep leagues, 20-team leagues, 18-team leagues, that sort of stuff. But he's not coming in and starting over Mo Harkless or Evan Turner or CJ McCollum, clearly. But I imagine that he will be a part of the rotation for this Blazers team. He signed a one-year minimum contract deal, as did our Omri Caspi with the Memphis Grizzlies, which I didn't reference earlier, and I should have. Let's go on to the last one of these signings that changed teams, and that's the Little Dog. Glenn Robinson III went from the Indiana Pacers to the Detroit Pistons. This signals to me that James Ennis probably won't be back For the Pistons, we've got Stanley Johnson on the wing there, Luke Kennard and Reggie Bullock as the two or three, and Robinson moves into that mix of players. He was a guy that before this season, or before this last season, had an opportunity for a role. Bojan Bogdanović came in and won that role, and Robinson missed most of the season with an ankle injury. Only played 23 games for the year. A guy who can provide some solid defense, who can hit some threes, and is a relatively productive player with some solid enough defense. But we don't know what Dwayne Casey is going to be looking at with Kennard, with Bullock, with Johnson. I'd be starting Kennard and Bullock on the wings there, but now with Johnson and Robinson in the mix, then I'm not sure that's the way they're going to go. But I think just with that mix of four guys, plus Kyrie Thomas, plus Bruce Brown as well, more wing players, which is what the NBA needs on teams to be successful. Not that these are necessarily great players, but you're getting your wings in there. I think with that mix of guys, it's going to put a limit on what Johnson can do and what Bullock can do and what Kennard can do, because it might be a 27-minute, 23-minute situation. Maybe Robinson can play some four, or Stanley Johnson can play some four behind Blake Griffin as well, especially if Anthony Tolliver's not going to come back and if Henry Allenson can't step up. So there are some options for the Pistons here. Robinson averaged just 4 points in 14 minutes per game last season. 4 rebounds, 1.4 steals per 36 minutes there. Yeah, not fantastic stuff, but a guy who does have some steal upside with some threes, but unlikely to be anywhere near a standard league guy, and probably going to be a 20-team league guy at best. But there is an opportunity here for him to get some run, especially if Casey doesn't believe in Stan Johnson. There is an opportunity for him at the age of 24 on a contract which is decently solid. 2 years, $8.3 million. Not a great deal, but definitely not a horrible one. I believe that last year is a team option as well. I would like to see Kennard and Bullock at the bulk of those minutes. I don't know that'll be the case. This could be trouble for Stan Johnson as he heads into a key year in his development, but Glenn Robinson now is a member of the Pistons. It's unlikely to have too much of a fantasy impact, I believe. And guys, unless anything has gone down in the time that I've been recording, this seems to be the, LeBron James has just signed with the Lakers. Holy shit. Just as I am recording this, he has signed a 4-year, $154 million contract, $154 million contract with the Los Angeles Lakers. Holy shit. All right, so this is clearly just happening live as I'm doing this. That is massive. LeBron's value isn't necessarily going to change too much. So many things can go down now with this Lakers team in terms of trades for Kawhi Leonard and all that sort of stuff. I'll do a full breakdown on LeBron tomorrow, but this has just come in now. LeBron goes to the Lakers. Absolutely stunning stuff here, to be honest. You don't expect seeing LeBron do that. Go to the Lakers. I can't. I had prepared a graphic for LeBron going to the Lakers already, and there it is. Bring it up for you guys on YouTube. Stunning stuff here. For LeBron, this is changing the NBA landscape massively. And could this mean Kawhi going? Could this mean many other moves taking place with the Lakers? This is, again, doesn't change really anything for LeBron in terms of his overall fantasy value. He's still going to be that same sort of a guy. People thinking that it's a real issue for a guy like Lonzo Ball, I don't think it is. I think Lonzo will thrive next to LeBron, assuming that's the case. It's going to have an impact on guys like Brandon Ingram. It might impact where Julius Randle ends up going, but I think Lonzo will be fine. Ingram's going to cop the biggest hit, but LeBron to the Lakers, 4 years. He is going to be seeing out his career with the Los Angeles Lakers, it appears. Jesus, that is absolutely massive news just as I was about to stop recording. So LeBron to the Lakers to wrap this up. I'll have more on that in tomorrow's show, but there's not really too much more to say about LeBron to the Lakers. He's LeBron. He'll do what he does. He's a first-round fantasy draft pick, and it does impact guys like Brandon Ingram pretty clearly, and I think Lonzo will be fine, assuming he remains on this team. Guys, go leave a five-star review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify. Give a thumbs up on YouTube and subscribe over there as well. Make sure you're checking out the rest of the Locked On Podcast Network for all of our podcasts. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Wes Awundu.